Chapter 18, The Palace. The Locatelli Palace, which is the current town hall, was built between 1748 and 1789 by Baron Giorgio, by expanding a previous building. The design is attributable to the master builders Michele Bon and Saverio Gianni, to whom the church of San Adalberto is also owed. The 16th century coat of arms above the rusticated door comes from Novali, or the other building in Cormons. The facade is monumental, divided into three parts, with elegant pilasters and mullioned windows. The interior preserves, on the ground floor, a room that housed the noble chapel, of which the rich floral decorations remain. The courtyard overlooks the complex of big cellars for wine and grains, and other subsequent buildings, including the so-called Folador, the stables, now a museum, and the Café Commercio, now a wine shop, built in the early 1900s. Here took place the third market exhibition of wines from the Gorizia area, held on April 21, 1940. But the square was also the center of the grape festival, already in the 30s, which had its roots in the traditions of the 19th century, well narrated by Caprin. A market is held every year for what is given to the land, seeds, and 6 months of daily market for what the land returns. It is a party which continues that triumphal procession that goes down with the first dawn of the morning. The farmers go down with the panniers or the zagote full of fruit. The zagota is a two-wheeled cart with a woven wicker basket to which a pair of oxen is yoked and is suitable for climbing the steep and channeled streets of the hills. From May to November, the Piazza of Cormons, Piazza Locatelli, shows the tribute that the gardens and orchards of its territory send to it. The procession of Vertuno, and that of Abundance, stops there, and the fruits go immediately to the countries of Upper Germany. Cherries begin to flow in, the harvests of the harvest, and soon enough, even the wild strawberries, raspberries, slate-colored plums, golden apricots, the red grapes of the monks and the gooseberries, the figs with the shirt torn, and hairy peaches. Finally, the rustier pink pears, the green apples, and the almonds with the glaucous velvet shell. All that the vegetation, quivering with juices, gives after its spring loves and the wedding of flowers. An occasion to catalogue all of the varieties, Cormonese grapes, Cucignan, Smoky Piccolet of Cormons, Mariabino, Ribolla Spizzade, Sant'Ane, Targasca, Vercluna, Ribolla Colata, Pasche. To confirm that the furnishings of the building were elegant, Carlotta only had to read the inventories made between 1796 and 1802. 6 ancient paintings stood on the porch, as many in the first adjoining room, plus 10 others more ancient. In the second bedroom, there are 2 large ancient portraits and 6 other paintings, 4 still life, 5 historical paintings, some depicting religious scenes, and many smaller ones. And more than 140 chairs, including those with leather cushions and others covered with damask, 16 armchairs, 9 of which are in yellow damask. Sideboards, writing desks, 47 small tables, at least 12 canapes, some in leather, others covered with fabric, a dozen mirrors, wall clocks, 18 beds, 26 lamps. On the main floor, there are still the decorations of the central hall and the atrium, made by the painter from Udine, Antonio Picco. In the room, the Strasoldo Torre and Locatelli coats of arms are frescoed above on just as many doors. This suggests that they referred to Cecilia della Torre, married to Giovanni, to Ernestina Strasoldo Villanova, wife of Giorgio, but also to Maria Strasoldo Graffenberg, wife of Michele. Interesting and mysterious are the allegorical figures shown on 12 painted columns in the central hall. There is a C with an angel on it. Could it be Cupid? There is the column with the S, perhaps to signify Sapientia. H, like Harmonia or Onos, who was a companion to Mars. With the T, Thalia, the muse of poetry, or the muse Terpsichore, or the Roman goddess Tutilina, protector of the collected and preserved wheat. Or were they rather the columns of a Masonic temple frequented by the Cormon Irredentists? If we go deeper in the research, the author of the frescoes, Picco, was active in the Risorgimento, already in the uprisings of 1848. A pupil of Giovan Battista Bernardelli of Cormons. He was distinguished by the neo-Baroque styles of the ornaments of a sitting room of Palazzo Locatelli, which frame four romantic landscapes dating back to 1860. Similar decorations he made in the 1950s, in the decoration of two rooms on the main floor of Palazzo de Brandis in Udine and Villa de Brandis in San Giovanni a Natisone, as well in Villa Sabadini Truant in Provesano di San Giorgio della Richimbelta, and in Palazzo Desia Tomasoni in Udine. While the works carried out in Palazzo Moisessoli Ruti Biasutti in Udine date back to 1876. On the ground floor, next to the staircase, the date 1885, which can be read in the mosaic of the floor, testifies to a further intervention. In this palace, in November 1859, the poet Pietro Zorutti visited Baron Michele, asking him to extend his greetings also to the Marquis Polesini, of pro-Italian sentiments, just like him. The sensitivity for the Risorgimento movements is also testified by a painting hung in a bedroom of the villa, a watercolor on paper entitled The Departure of the Thousand from Quarto. Chapter 19, From Angoris to Lovaria. Great War or Fourth War of Independence? World War I. In Angoris, in hospital number 230, a health hospital, had been set up to host and treat soldiers suffering from cholera. Nurses were not the only ones there. There was also Capuchin tertiary nuns who arrived there on August 27, 1915, after leaving Genoa 10 days earlier. There were 9 sisters in service, Sister Teodolinda di San Giuseppe, Sister Alessandra of San Giovanni, Sister Dorotea of San Luigi, Sister Federica of Sant'Urbano, Sister Edoarda of San Filippo, Sister Benvenuta of San Francesco, Sister Agata of San Nicolò, and Sister Modesta of San Giorgio. The superior was Sister Filomena of San Siro, who wrote a diary that has come to us. All except Mother Modesta, because of the brevity of her service, received the bronze medal for merit, because they assisted the cholera affected. On August 27th, we left for Langoris, 3 kilometers beyond Cormons. On the 28th, we took our service to the poor soldiers affected by cholera. There were 2 departments. Sister Filomena took the lower floor, and Sister Teodolinda the upper floor. I had 76 people, and Sister Teodolinda 85. Sister Alessandra took up service in the kitchen the same evening we arrived, and Sister Benvenuta stayed in the house for that day. They had arrived in Langoris at 11 a.m. All the officers had gone to greet them, including Major Basili, frowned upon by all. But beyond the compliments, no one thought of feeding them, so that they had fasted until 15 p.m., when a soldier gave them 4 cups of broth, rusty tin bowls, little bread, 4 pieces of meat, and alas, little wine. On the 28th day, Sister Todolinda and I took up service in the wards. Between the two of us, we had nearly 200 cholera patients. The first few days, even 20 died a day. It was a pitying thing, many young lives succumbing to the scythe of the death. When we arrived in Langoris, there was only one department. Later, 8 departments opened, not counting the tents. Out of 16,000 injured, 1,300 had died. Around 20 October, Major Basili left and was replaced by Captain Mendes, a career officer of Jewish religion. He was extremely good, but also very strict. Always proud and with a slightly haughty demeanor, as soon as he arrived, he inquired about how the nuns were treated and made the decision to transfer these and the officers to the Locatelli castle. To avoid contact with the military, he had a wall raised to divide the terrace. The wounded arrived numerous. Some Austrian cannon shots struck Ormonds, and in February 1916, the alarming warning arrived that perhaps they had to move out of the beautiful Langoris for fear that the Austrians would bomb the hospital, as it was surrounded by cannons and trenches. The nuns had already packed their bags, and on the 10th of the month, Captain Mendes communicated that the new destination was going to be Lovaria. In the end, however, nothing was done. So a few days later, they went to San Quirino to visit the other sisters, and some officers invited them to see the explorer Balloon Dragon. It was a voluminous balloon, like a vessel, with which they explored all the countries of Austria. On March 14, after 7 months spent in Angoris, they moved to Lovaria, where they remained until the end of October 1917. After the defeat of Caporetto, the Austrian army arrives in Langoris, or rather, it returns to Austro-Hungary. The most eloquent proof is a postcard with a Habsburg double-headed eagle. The inscription, Weltkrieg, World War, 1914-1918. The photo of the inscription, Mannschaft Rekonvaleszenten Station, which was a male convalescent station. Made in 1918, at the bottom of a circle, there is a drawing depicting some cypresses entitled Heldenhugen, Hill of Heroes. Also dated 1918 from March 21 is a drawing by Oton Ivković, one of the most renowned Croatian painters, who during the conflict was a correspondent of war, also depicting many scenes of military life. This pencil drawing is titled In the Park Among the Cypresses, which depicts the park, the cypresses, and the tomb of a captain who died in 1916. Mulberry trees are also seen, proof of the existing silkworm culture. In Lovaria, in the municipality of Pavia, Udine, not in Lombardy, lived and still lives the branch of the Locatelli family that in 1866 had moved to the Kingdom of Italy, abandoning the Habsburgs. But who were they? Do you remember Francis, author of the Libro Universal, who died in 1725? Here, his namesake nephew, called by his friends Franzil, was economically in bad shape, so much so that his son Antonio would have sold the family goods, including the Novali farm with the House of Eulenburg, abandoning the archival papers. It was 1861. The ancient House of Eulenburg was then little more than a farm, known in the surrounding area with the Slovenian toponym Cemajna, although it was inhabited by a Friulian farmhouse family. At that time, the head of the family was Domenico Godeas, known as Barba Meni. Antonio's son was also called Francesco, but he would have later truncated with a family tradition. He participated in the uprisings of the 48 and became passionate about the irredentist ideal, settling first in Milan and then in Udine. He had fled to the Kingdom of Italy, driven by the enthusiasm of irredentism. The title of Barons of Eulenberg and Schönfeld had already been reserved for some time, with a sovereign approval, from another branch of the family, untitled, which could however boast wealth and proven loyalty to the House of Austria. In 1859, Caterina Percotto also speaks of him in some letters. Since the opportunity of this young Locatelli is propitious to me, I enclose an article that I had written for the Gazzetta del Popolo of Milan, but that having our committee recommended quietly, I feared that I had lost opportunity. You, who are in better good, if you think you can, publish it without any other signature other than how it is marked. It all started with some anti-Habsburg from Cormoz. 1848 had awakened pro-Italian and pro-Savoy feelings in many exponents of the Gorizia nobility. Anti-Austrian positions that had already started after Napoleon, among the Against the House of Austria, reported in 1813, are the noble Baselli, Codelli, Coronini, De Grazia, and others. In 1848, as many as 26 persons from Gorizia were denounced because politically suspect. In 1859, in Gorizia, the members of the Action Party remained unknown to the police, not in Cormoz. Thus, the principal exponent, Dr. Costantino Cumano, was arrested and translated before the war court. Baron de Buffa, on May 18, 1859, sent to the lieutenant of the literal Baron de Mertens a long report on the events of Cormoz. The so-called sessions are held not only in the Novale estate, belonging to Baron Antonio Locatelli, who usually lives in Udine, but also in Cormoz in the house of Dr. Cumano. In addition to Dr. Cumano, Baron Antonio Locatelli, Count Zucco, pharmacist Bertossi, the two Naglost brothers, and a certain Dorligo intervene. A certain Baron Giovanni del Mestri and a Count Giambattista del Mestri, both sons-in-law of the good Austrian Baron Giorgio Locatelli, had been reported and were known to him. Secret meetings, but also speeches in a cafeteria and hotel in Cormoz, in the Graia Theater, so much so as to require to suspend the performances and to ban the drama company to arrest the actor. It must have been to avoid these problems that Baron Giorgio Locatelli, undoubtedly pro-Habsburg, frequented the theater of Gorizia. In the mid-1800s, he owned stage 5 on the ground floor, while stage 24 of the First Order belonged to his son. Simultaneously, on May 21st, 1859, Ernestina Locatelli born Strasoldo and her daughter Cecilia Claricini formed a committee of ladies to collect, in relief of the sick and injured of the Royal Army, some second-hand linen to be reduced to pieces, some already prepared pieces of cloth, linen for the people, and the beds, bandages, duvets, flannels, and any other help in general, or in money to aid the hospitals, urging charity and philanthropy with the invitation to send offers also in your home in Angoris. In April 1878, 100 printed flyers were distributed in Cormoz. We, people of Cormoz, are Italians, and we want to be united with our great mother Italy. Therefore, long live Italy, and the stranger who insults us every day in our holiest aspirations shall leave our lands. The signatures of loyal subjection collected these days have resulted from pressure from this hybrid government, not a free, true manifestation of our will. Italian blood flows in our hearts, and this blood trembles and will make the stranger who wants to impose us where we are masters tremble. Those who say that this is not an Italian land lie, and all curses that lie on those who renounce their mother and brothers shall fall upon him. Always live the union to our dear homeland, Italy. Our Italian brothers live. What contradictions!
The cousin, loyal to the Savoys, goes to the Kingdom of Italy, and after an experience in Milan, returns to Friuli. The relative noble Cavalier Omero Locatelli, in 1890, became director of Banca Popolare di Udine. Subsequently, in 1906, he engaged in the creation of an anonymous joint stock company for the production and trade of plants and related products and operations. Still, in 1915, he was found on various boards of directors. A true financier.
Chapter 20. Banks, pawn shops, cash. The circulating money was precious, and even the sovereigns sometimes had to resort to loans, which were rewarded with feudal titles and rights. This had undoubtedly happened with Colonel Locatello, who had paid soldiers out of his own pocket in the 30 Years' War. In 1637, he conquered the imperial city of Giengen, where he took the burgomasters hostage, since they did not pay the accommodation costs of the troops, 5,969 florins. In 1656, Locatelli is mentioned on the occasion of a mutiny by the imperial army, always for the bail money. The planned cell division of the old regiments had created bad blood, especially as half of the Ranft regiment had to take over only for Locatelli, since the times when he commanded the fortress of Elba, Dömitz. But Ranft prefers to make the wages of his people disappear in his pockets. At that time, there were no banks like today. There were loans, often usurious, made by pawn shops in the hands of Jewish families. And therefore, ecclesiastical authorities favored the birth of the Monti di Pietà, under Catholic control. When Ulderico della Torre was the captain of Gradisca, the town was ruled by the princes of Eggenberg. There was an Israelite community, complete with a synagogue, and despite the liberal government of the Eggenbergs, a Mount of Pietà and a majestic building was built to house it in 1670. This stone from 1671 remembers it. It sits in the large atrium above a door. Quadjuvantes Iulio Bar, de fin, Ioanne Maria Cevot Villesi, Paroco Laurenzio Locatello, deputatis, gradiscane, inclite convocationis, cuius sumptibus fundatus. The aforementioned Lorenzo had just been admitted among the nobles of the principality in 1655, after a bad vote in 1648. But Locatelli quickly made up for lost time and intervened in the foundation of the Monte as a deputy of the Diet. Then he became commissioner of the accounts. In 1701, he was elected Montista, or manager of the Monte, for 5 years. At the end of his mandate, he became deputy to the Annona, that is, to control food prices, until 1709. In January 1710, he was appointed commissioner, and from 23 December, he was also a debt collector. In 1715, for having administered the collection, he received 200 florins as a gift. Once again, in 1730, he will be Montista. In short, a life spent managing money, paying a 5% interest rate to the venerable churches for capital given to Monte, specified the parish priest. Decades later, another debt collector had been at the center of controversy and accusations. He tried to be reconfirmed in the office, but Morelli obtained the net defeat of the candidate, Lodovico Ortensio Locatelli, by 14 in favor votes against 69 against. He had checked the accounts, discovering and reporting substantial shortages. They were not the first ones in the family. The Gradisca-born Giuseppe Locatelli had been a tax attorney for Gorizia, the father of Ortensio as well. One day, the city representatives asked him to build a new passage on the Isonzo. He made a deaf ear, yet it was the merchants who asked for it. They even wrote a petition, courtly. Locatelli read it and replied to them in verse. Talor qualor quinci sovente eguari, fatevi il ponte coi vostri danari. A few centuries later, we find another member of the family, a relative of that Cormonese who passed over to the Savoys in 1866, who moved to Turin and then to Udine, Homer, who was first a cashier and then director of the Banca Popolare di Udine. Even the balance of the municipality of Gorizia notes a capital of 25,000 florins, owned by Baron Michele Locatelli for a resolution dated July 1, 1873. A good figure for the time. But the relationships with lenders does not stop there. The pawn shop of Gorizia, founded in 1831 by an exponent of the Torre family, changes its name to Casa di Risparmio, and from the delivery note, 15 February 1939, for the passage from the extraordinary administration of the Casa di Risparmio di Gorizia to the ordinary one with the reconstitution of the board of directors, respectively, Valentino Pascoli and Piero Locatelli Hagenauer are chairman and vice presidents, appointed by decree of the leader on January 5, 1939. Piero, a decade later, in the session of April 20, 1949, became president, a prestigious position he held until March 1960, when Giuseppe Musi took over for him. Over the years, he became president of the Federation of Savings Banks of Venice in the council and, from correspondence with the federation, learned of his appointment to the board of directors of the same federation for the two-year period, 1953-1954. In 1948, the bank acquired the building, designed by Leopoldo Claricini, located in Gorizia in Corso Roosevelt 5, at the corner of Via Generale Cascino 1, from the Locatelli family, and planned to transform it to transfer its headquarters from Via Carducci. It never happened. In more recent times, Giulio Locatelli's children also enter credit institutions. Luciano was administrator of Banca Popolare di Cividale, and Pierantonio was one of the members of the board of directors of Financial Friulia, the chest of the region. Chapter 21, The Treasure. A billiard challenge. Alla Goriziana, we are here to free Gorizia, suggested the lieutenant. The name of the city and the bloody sixth battle of the Isonzo certainly did not cheer up the spirits. And the other officer echoed him with a verse of the anarchic and melancholic song. Painful there was the departure, and the return for many was not. He said it humming, but in a low voice,
because intoning Gorizia, you are cursed, meant a risk of being shot. Once the 9 pins and red ivory ball were set, each took his cue, rubbed the leather tip with chalk, and felt ready to strike. The aviator proved to be the most skilled, especially when, with a 5-sided kick, he managed to hit all the small pins, to break down the castle, as they say in jargon. Good boy! But I would be happier to see you tear down the castle of the Austrians instead of this on the green cloth, damn it, the other said disconsolate, looking at his points written with pencil on a sheet. There were only 2s. Some for having hit the white pins on the outside, others for penalties. A little nervous, his chalk fell under the pool table, amidst the laughter of the opponent. On all fours, with little light, he realized that from a kind of secret drawer, like the one that some ancient desks have, the corner of a yellowed sheet of paper protruded. He took it, and approaching the lamp, called the other soldier to read. It was a copy of the engraving depicted Colonel Locatello, on whose back there were a lot of numbers. It looked like a score, but the numbers were too high and odd to refer to billiards. Some were in ancient handwriting, 3515, 11.27. Underneath, another sequence of numbers with a livelier ink, 0060.32108.3510.17.3169.17.3169.17.3270.70.3275.37.0.88.3851.4244.3590.65.33.25.63.25. In the adjoining library, there was a 17th century cipher that the aviation officer had used for some messages to be sent to the command. By now, he was an accomplice to the other and could not hide the secret from him. They opened it together and decrypted the numbers. Holland FH. They were the initials of the Dutch engraver. And then, from a later era, there was this other message, like a riddle, or rather, an enigma. A phrase like this came up. Having the desire for Dutch money, a cavalry general with an expedient gives any satisfaction for the future. Prudence and intelligence. They looked at each other, thought of how to interpret it. The general's portrait, one of them said before he could stop himself. Shh, let's not make ourselves heard, heck! They went to the nearby room, and favored by the dark, they detached the plaster frame that kept the canvas walled up. Carefully removed the portrait. Here, they found a dark niche full of spiderwebs. They approached the lamp, which was kept to a minimum so as not to be discovered, and saw a large bottle. Some wine? But what satisfaction will it be? It will be undrinkable. Bewildered and disappointed, they sat on the ground. A few minutes later, whether out of curiosity, out of desperation, or just to end the search, one of the two stood up and said to the other, "We just have to taste it." But the bottle, of the bellied ones with a short neck and the dark green glass, weighed disproportionately. There could not be a liquid inside. With difficulty, they removed the cork, after breaking the sealing wax on which an owl was imprinted. They folded it as if to pour wine, and the surprise was indescribable. Diamonds of different sizes fell. Incredulous, they looked at each other, and the explanation came to mind. Locatello had gone to Holland to be portrayed by Hulsius, and Amsterdam in 1649 was already the capital of diamond cutting. Maybe it was a spoil of war. At least 3 or 4 kilos of diamonds, millions of lire. That's why Dutch denari. ¶¶ They left happily, but at dawn, the dream was gone. The bottle and its precious cargo were gone, stolen by someone. The lieutenant took the yellow marble and threw it against the window. The aviator broke the queue. A blinding anger, they had neither the time nor the opportunity to unmask the thief. A hope of wealth that had been truncated during the intoxication, but that the inexorable scythe of death would have anyway nipped shortly thereafter. One was shot down by the enemy anti-aircraft a few weeks later. The other died in the trenches of the Karst. The former rests in his native land, next to his loved ones, the second in Torrione Langoris, at the ossuary of Slavia, together with his soldiers. The only precious objects they obtained were the medals on their chest, whose value for many was higher than diamonds. November 1968. He had seen the Collio again, admired it around him, luxuriant and colorful, never uniform or monotonous, unfortunately divided by a border, which nature, however, overlooks and surpasses. How fallacious is a man's action, thought Carlotta. Other times, however, the human act becomes art, like producing those wines that he had tasted at Angoris. Authentic nectars that managed to enclose the aromas of the countryside, the taste of asparagus or elderberry, the aroma of the land on which they are born. The child had fallen asleep, listening to grandmother Carlotta, who skillfully recounted these adventures, perhaps once lived, perhaps invented. What did it matter? Grandchildren loved it. He put her brown hair in place, arranged the covers, and went to rest too. They had just returned to Padua after visiting Angoris. In truth, grandmother Carlotta was not very tired because she had helped the driver. Before going to bed, she went down the long corridor of the Palladian villa and, at the end, ordered the housekeeper what she wanted for breakfast. Her husband had been hunting for hares and was already snoring. She slipped into the silk sheets and, before turning off the light, observed for a few moments the recent purchase. The Massacre of the Innocent by Rubens. Better and better, she thought, grinning.